there, Super Conscious Success fam. Welcome back to another chapter reading. So we are two chapters away from finishing our book, Buddhism for Mothers. So I'm going to bring this chapter to you, which is on meditating. Now, those that know me know I am a massive fan of meditating, and I probably meditate maybe 2 hours a day, maybe give and take an hour or so. And I think that it's a really important thing that we can be doing to be able to keep ourselves calm, keep our blood pressure low, and keep ourselves living the most optimal life that we possibly can. So I'm going to go into this. This chapter really talks about meditating and how meditating is actually good for helping you to deal with your children. And so, yeah, let's get stuck into it. Why would a mother, with all the competing demands for her time, make time to meditate? There would have to be some very compelling reasons, and there are. In chapter 2, we saw how mindfulness, which we practice in meditation, provides us with energy to fulfill our tasks, calm to deal with negative emotions, and insight which helps us learn and grow spiritually. Mindfulness helps us to be attentive parents who are more capable of seeing our situations clearly. We've also seen that the more we can live in the present as practiced in meditation, the more fully we live our lives and the more joy we find. As the Buddha said, with our minds we create our world. The more healthy, positive and kind our minds are, the more happiness we can experience and the more benefits for our children. Buddhism teaches that meditation is the best tool for transforming our minds. Meditation is a time to become familiar with more positive mind states, to immerse ourselves in them, and to experience for ourselves a taste of clarity, calmness, and kindness. In meditation, we rehearse a higher way of being, which we gradually transfer to our day-to-day life. A wealth of medical findings pointed to the positive effects of meditation on our health have also been documented. Dr. Herbert Benson, a Harvard Medical School professor, studied the impact of meditation for almost 30 years and found meditators decreased their visits to health professionals by more than a third. He claims that when the body is in a state of deep calm, it repairs itself. Whereas stress interferes with our body's state of balance, making us less immune to disease and infection, deep relaxation puts our bodies into a state of balance conducive to healing. Dr. Benson is by no means alone. Other medical researchers report that the calm we find in meditation eases our stress levels throughout the day, lowers our blood pressure by up to 50%, and improves our heart function. Meditation has also been proven to help us sleep more soundly and improve our general mood. A survey by the American Association of Health Plans found that 8 out of 10 doctors think meditation should be included in their training for the sake of both doctors and patients. It's becoming a cliche to say that if meditation came in a pill, we'd pay a fortune for it. The benefits of a meditating mother to family life are also clear. When I ask mothers why they meditate, they say, "It makes me calmer. I have less trouble with anger. It helps me keep annoyances in perspective. I feel happier, less confused, less crabby, and less irritable." As this mother said, "I meditate as a form of anger management, anxiety management, and general negativity management. But it's not just about dealing with the negatives. It's about a way to connect with the positive and create potential for joy and happiness and a whole new way of seeing my life." Chittaprabha is an ordained member of the Friends of the Western Buddhist Order. With her long blonde hair and energetic ways, she appears younger than me, even though she is now a grandmother of 5. Chittaprabha makes some interesting points about the benefits of meditation. Too much task-oriented activity can remove us from the essential experience of being fully present and from seeing and responding to the beauty and suffering around us. Through meditation, I discover a spaciousness of mind which allows a deeper sense of my relationship to the world and a deeper intimacy and confidence in myself. My perspective broadens, and instead of operating through the power mode, I interact through the love mode. I have found ways of sharing this sense of spaciousness with children, sometimes through appreciation of nature and being kind to animals. Through meditation and increased awareness, I learn that life goes far beyond my own immediate needs and circumstances. I touch a much deeper intuition of the interconnectedness of life. Importantly, I start to realize the consequences of my actions, and this has led to a more refined ethical sense. Given these benefits, meditation might turn out to be one of the greatest discoveries of our life. Of course, as with any new skill, we struggle at first. We face doubts and allow ourselves to be tempered by all the other activities we should be doing. But with the potential of meditation to improve every aspect of our lives, emotional, physical, spiritual, psychological, we may become committed to it sooner than we expected. There are many different meditation techniques in Buddhism, and you may eventually choose one that most helps you with your specific situation and your specific character tendencies. In this chapter, we investigate the 2 most common forms of Buddhist meditation. mindfulness of the breath meditation, and loving kindness meditation. Bear in mind though, all Buddhist traditions emphasize the importance of learning meditation directly from a qualified teacher. First things first. Buddhist teachers often recommend establishing a special place set aside for meditating. Some meditators delight in decorating this spot with meaningful symbols, a picture of the Buddha, a statue, some incense, candles, photos of your teacher, or other inspiring Buddhas, some verses from scriptures. You could build your own altar. If you can create a space with atmosphere, you make your practice more alluring, but this is optional. My husband wants no such space in his house. The poor love finds it all too weird, so I make do without. It's enough for him to have a wife who likes to sit in a trance, let alone live with all the strange paraphernalia, so I won't push it. Traditionally, meditators sit cross-legged on the floor, but a straight-backed chair does the job. What's important is to keep your posture upright. Slouching and slumping leads to aches and sleepiness. Short of time for formal sittings, you might be tempted to meditate in bed on waking. It's a poor substitute for a formal sitting and makes it harder to reach an adequate level of concentration. Still, some days it's all the time you'll find, and trying to meditate is better than lying there in a state of dread about the day ahead. Like any time of the day, it's another opportunity to practice mindfulness. No matter what your position, try to meditate with your eyes the slightest bit open. It may feel awkward at first, but allowing a little light in wards off sleepiness. If possible, your meditation should take place when you wake in the morning before your mind is relatively clutter-free. Still, the best time to meditate is always personal. Some people feel too groggy in the morning and find meditating before bedtime ensures a restful night. Others find evening sittings makes them too alert or gives them too much energy to fall asleep. To prepare your mind for meditation, a calming activity may help. Yoga, reading spiritual writings, ironing, folding laundry, or anything that helps you slow down and focus. Although the types of meditation the Buddhists use are many, there is one common to all schools, and invariably it is the first one we learn when new to Buddhism. Usually called mindfulness of breath, it requires that we sit still, relax, close our eyes, and be aware of the rise and fall of our breath. We don't need to think about the breath or control it in any way. Neither do we need to concentrate really, really hard. It's more a case of relaxing and watching our breath as you eventually become one with its rise and fall. When our attention wanders, we patiently bring it back to our breath without any mental comment. A new meditator finds focusing their attention impossible, so the meditation often includes some built-in support. Many meditators find it helpful to bring their attention to the breath by easing slowly into the first stage. My meditation teacher gradually lowers the class into mindfulness of breath by focusing on relaxing first. Slowly, she guides. Close your eyes and listen to all the sounds. Bring your attention to the room and the people in it, and now consider your own body. Its shape, the points where it connects with the floor. Gradually work your attention down your body, releasing any tension you find, starting with the scalp. Now focusing on your facial muscles, allow your face to feel like soft melting butter and moving down to your neck. After moving down the whole body, we start to watch the rise and fall of each breath. Counting each breath as a way to anchor your attention can also help. One approach is the four-stage meditation described shortly and taught by the Friends of the Western Buddhist Order in their introductory courses. On days when you feel focused and clear, you might concentrate on your breath without using the four stages. You can always come back to them if you find your mind wandering too often. Roughly 5 minutes on each stage is the general advice for beginners, but don't be too concerned with clock watching. Those new to meditation who find it difficult might want to start with only a few minutes and gradually increase the time with each sitting. Achieving insight during meditation. In the four-stage meditation, we deal with distractions by returning our attention to the breath. Yet meditation has even greater potential if we allow our distractions to run their course, but observe them mindfully. This is far more difficult, especially for those new to meditation who might struggle to concentrate. The ability to watch our thoughts mindfully without allowing ourselves to become entangled in them could be a longer-term goal to pursue when our concentration has improved. Certainly, the ability to observe our thoughts helps us achieve life-changing insights and dispense with our more self-defeated beliefs and behaviors. Whether we watch our distractions or resist them, we don't approach meditation specifically seeking insight. We merely provide the conditions for insight to arise by striving to make our minds clear. Helen Janderman is a mother and meditation teacher with a flair for analogies. She explains how meditation paves the way for insight. Watching the breath gradually becomes like a white background. If a speck of dust is placed on a white background, it is easier to see its form than if it is placed on a dusty surface. With practice and a deepening of concentration, the speck and all its attribute becomes clearer still. And when we see our deepest tendencies for what they really are, they lose their power to control us. Insight is what makes us understand what's really going on in our life so that we can become aware of and change our habitual reactions and behavior. Insight also gives us a chance to understand the Buddha's teachings, not just intellectually, but through direct experience, a far more powerful agent of change. In Handbook for Mankind, Buddhasaka Bhikshu lists some of the teachings that insight can illuminate for us. The expression insight into the true nature of things refers to seeing transience, unsatisfactoriness, and non-selfhood, seeing that no thing is worth getting, no thing is worth being, seeing that no object whatsoever should be grasped at and clung to as being a self or as belonging to self, as being good or bad, attractive or repulsive. Hindrances. Meditating can be enjoyable, relaxing, wondrous, and blissful. Sometimes it can be the opposite. Establishing a meditation practice may not be smooth sailing. A new meditator experiences frustration at the way their mind keeps wandering and doubts about the value of meditation. Or they could find themselves not in the mood. As they try to focus on their breath using the four-stage meditation, they may find their mind working like this. 1, 2, my foot's itchy. Should I scratch it? I wonder if my foot's fully healed after that injury. Stop it. 3, 4, 5. Oh no, I didn't send that letter. Now what am I going to do? Oops. 6, 7. I wonder if I'm doing this right. I certainly stuffed up the meditation yesterday. Stop thinking. This isn't working. With practice, concentration improves, distractions are fewer, and the beginner develops more confidence. Soon they start to notice how developing mindfulness enriches their lives, and this motivates them to persist through the more difficult days. With commitment, they eventually reach a point where meditation becomes as natural as showering or cleaning their teeth, and they yearn for it if they miss a day. Interestingly, in 8 Mindful Steps to Happiness, Walking the Buddha's Path, the Thai author Gunaratna comments that Westerners starting meditation can be too severe with themselves. He describes them as ambitious, driven, goal-oriented, and insecure. He continues, they clamp down on the mind and try to make it behave by sheer force of will. Often they become self-judging and harsh. He points out that we should meditate to watch the mind, not control it. Knowing his followers would struggle with meditation, the Buddha warned of the 5 hindrances or obstacles that we can expect to meet. These are 1. Distracting thoughts. 2. Ill will, such as anger or other dark moods. 3. Sleepiness. 4. Restlessness. And 5. Doubt. A qualified teacher can advise us on how to deal with the obstacles that trouble us. I remember when I first started meditating, my mind seemed to be so prone to wandering off into daydreams, so incapable of stillness, that a sitting could feel like a waste of time. It took a couple of months of solid practice to feel some progress, to find more space between the thoughts, to learn that I could reach a place of stillness that could replenish me. Cultivating the mind of love. To possess a mind of love is to recognize that all living beings are precious. It's helpful to remember that preciousness does not dwell in objects, but in our minds. Consider the 2 objects, a diamond and a bowl of water. Which one is more precious? To the mind of someone lost in the desert, the bowl of water is more precious. To the mind of a jeweler, a diamond is more precious. Preciousness is subjective, a quality of mind rather than a quality of the object. To love people, we need a loving mind more than we need people to act lovably. Our love for others won't depend on their personal characteristics, behavior, or relationship with us, but on our loving minds. We can even love difficult people, if for no other reason than for their role in our lives as spiritual teachers. For this, we can be grateful. If our lives were full of likable people, we'd be short of opportunities to grow wiser. But it's not only difficult people we can love for this reason. We can feel gratitude towards everyone we meet because they are all capable of making us wiser. They all provide us with opportunities to train ourselves in the mind of love. Loving kindness meditation is a way to cultivate the mind of love by wishing ourselves and others well. Sending loving kindness is a way to transform your mind into one capable of loving all living beings. In doing this, others may eventually benefit in highly practical ways because there's someone in their lives who cares about them and wants the best for them. We start by developing feelings of loving kindness for ourselves. We then do the same for a loved one, followed by someone we don't know very well, and then someone we don't particularly like. We conclude by sending loving kindness to all living beings, starting with those in close proximity and gradually widening to include the whole world. As you focus on each person, you remind yourself that just like you, they want to be happy and free from suffering and unhappiness, that we're all connected through this shared urge. Whereas with mindfulness meditation, we observe any thoughts but return our attention to the breath, in loving kindness meditation, we need to think actively and creatively. For example, with a difficult person, we may need to think about the suffering and dissatisfaction in their life before we can feel compassion. It may take some reflection on their situation, their struggles, their disappointments, before we can acknowledge that this person is precious. Removing our focus from selfish concerns, we begin to think of others with kindness as we overcome feelings of separation. Of course, it might take many years to transform our mind into one that is truly loving, especially as we begin to work on our more difficult relationships. But even a beginner can start to feel like a more loving person within a short period of practicing loving kindness meditation. Ideas of ways to help people may bubble into our consciousness during the meditation. Perhaps we might remember to phone or send a card to someone who is celebrating or suffering. Many meditators like to finish the meditation by thinking of one act of kindness they'll carry out in the subsequent hours. Bowing. Some meditators find it useful while practicing loving kindness meditation to picture themselves bowing before the person to whom they're sending loving kindness. For many Westerners, the idea of bowing jars at first, but our reaction depends on the associations we make with bowing. It's not as if we're lowly urchins bowing for a tyrannical king, a fearsome god, or some magical power. For many Buddhists, bowing is simply an expression of respect and gratitude. To bow is to honor a person's dignity, humanity, and preciousness. It feels humbling, but in the most positive way, as we suspend any tendency to be judgmental and superior. And feelings of compassion arise, not from pity, but from heartfelt esteem for a precious living being. We can also see bowing as an expression of gratitude for all that this person, be they beloved or belligerent, teaches us. We bow in gratitude for their potential to make us wiser and for the opportunity they give us to practice love. An image I find useful is to imagine the Buddha placing his hands just above my head and channeling great torrents of loving kindness. I then imagine myself placing my hands just above the heads of others as I send them loving kindness. When to practice loving kindness meditation. One of the purposes of loving kindness meditation is to cultivate our capacity to love all beings, ourselves, our loved ones, neutral people, and difficult people. Since this is so difficult, we practice loving kindness meditation as often as we possibly can. Again, for a mother, where do we find the time? Yet loving kindness meditation is a practice which transfers easily to daily life. Ideally, we find time to practice it as a sitting meditation, but it's just as valuable to send out love as we interact with others or even as we walk around the shops and streets. We can direct loving kindness to anyone we see. It feels strange at first, but doesn't take long to feel normal, and it certainly beats walking along consumed in our own thoughts. Achieving wonders for our state of mind, we find we have more positive feelings and energy to meet the demands of our day. I find loving kindness meditation particularly useful before and during any social gathering. It helps me to listen attentively and refrain from interrupting, speak more kindly, be aware of ways I can help others, avoid rambling on self-indulgently offering no benefit to the listener, enjoy myself as I feel less self-conscious, less self-absorbed. Sending loving kindness is also useful before and during a day in the workplace or any event where we need to interact with others. It heightens our sensitivity to what others are experiencing so that we might become a valuable person wherever we go. Finding time for meditation. Finding the time to meditate will perhaps present a greater challenge to mothers than any challenge they meet during meditation. But given the benefits of meditation, is there something you could drop from your schedule? The time could come from skipping some TV shows. The average person views 2 or 3 hours of TV each day. Although mothers probably bring this average down, even if you only watch half an hour a day, you'd benefit enormously from meditating instead. Or the time to meditate might come from dropping your standards of housework, waking earlier, or sending your family on a regular outing without you. As a mother of young children, Chittaprabha from the Western Buddhist Order was a committed meditator, rising early in the morning, and when her children were older, attending weekend or week-long retreats. She insists that she was able to be a far better mother by taking this time. Meditation is a way not only to attend to my own needs, but to develop an awareness of others so that I can participate in all that I do in a more positive and creative way. Becoming more aware of the broader meaning of my life and of my true nature leads to a deeper sense of joy, contentment, and equanimity from which everyone around me benefits. The aim is to take the awareness that we develop through meditation and allow it to permeate our whole life. As a mother, such awareness helped me see how I interacted with my children and the effects of my actions. So instead of repeating mistakes in an old habitual manner, I could use awareness to bring about positive change and let go of a fixed and unchanging way of parenting. Being a parent can be a very important and enriching aspect of our lives, but our lives go beyond this. If I devoted all my attention to my children's desires, I would only be focused on my immediate world, and I'd be given up the opportunity to become a true individual. When I embraced the wider perspective available through meditation, I became more creative, free, and responsive to the whole of life around me, and less grasping and attached to my children and the things that brought me pleasure. The pleasure of loving and interacting spontaneously with children lessened if I tried to hold on too tightly. So I've always tried to seek a range of wholesome sources of pleasure, at the same time avoiding any grasping attachment to those pleasures. Her two daughters, Michelle and Cara, laugh as they remember telling their mums at times throughout their childhood, "Mum, I think it's time for you to go on another retreat." Amusingly, many Buddhist parents report that it's often their children who remind them to take some time to meditate. Chittaprabha also makes the point that to raise responsible, considerate children, we need to teach them awareness and respect for the needs of others, including those of their parents. Although this is trickier when our children are young and egocentric, eventually they need to understand our needs for some space to ourselves. Chittaprabha urges all mothers to find some time every day, even if it's 1 minute, to reflect on something higher than themselves and their immediate lives. We make some time in each day where we can aspire to be our greatest selves. It might be a time to read and reflect on a short verse. We might light some candles or incense to offer to the Buddha, or we meditate. And if we are not making this time, we could ask ourselves what will inspire us to do so. For some, it might be nature, or it could be reading, talking to our spiritual friends, involvement in a spiritual community. It's worth remembering that in developing mindfulness, we might gain more time in our day. As we've discussed, with a more focused and clear mind, we use our time more effectively and find more energy. Many meditators claim they can survive on less sleep, the deep levels of concentration they attain in meditation providing a higher quality of rest. So there you go. That's a chapter on meditation. And I think you'll find that it's very interesting. It really does go over all the benefits associated with meditation. Now, you'll notice that throughout it, I haven't actually gone into the different meditations that she's recommended. But what I will say is that I have included them in the inner circle. So if you go to superconsciousssuccess.com/innercircle, you can sign up absolutely free. You'll get all the notes of all the books. You'll get free courses. It's currently being created, so there's lots more going into it. But you'll find all of the summaries and chapters that are in the books that I read. And that's going to include the different meditations that she's included. That includes the mindfulness of breath meditation, the insight meditation, and also the loving kindness meditation. There's three meditations you'll find in there. They'll be in text form, so you can just go and read those meditations, learn how to do it, and it's really beneficial for you. So head across there, sign up for the Inner Circle. I hope you're really enjoying this book. I hope you've got a lot out of it as a mother. And I hope that you can now start to integrate these techniques that will allow you to not only feel like you're a better mother, but also be a bit calmer and more relaxed when it comes to the kids. So thanks so much for joining me today. And I will bring you the second chapter very shortly. And the last chapter very shortly. And I'm really looking forward to it. So I will catch you later. Okay, bye.